Last episode, I left everyone with a slightly unsettling idea. What if time does not flow at all? What if the past and future are not vanishing and arriving, but simply there? In this episode of Inertia, I want to build off of that and go deeper. I'm Rania Sutton, and this podcast is where physics and philosophy collide without simplifying the hard parts. We're now going to move beyond the surface question of whether time exists and into something a bit more precise. If the universe is a static, four-dimensional structure, why does it feel like it moves? To answer that, we're going to go through McTaggart's paradox, Minkowski space-time, entropy, the past hypothesis, and quantum decoherence, and asking what, if anything, is left of the present by the end of it. As a reminder, we've already covered the foundational definitions of the A-series, the dynamic language of past, present, and future, and the B-series, the tenseless ordering of earlier than and later than. We know that the A-series maps to presentism, the view that the universe is a 3D system updated moment by moment, while the B-series maps to eternalism, the fixed 4D block. To go deeper into JME McTaggart's 1908 paper, The Unreality of Time, we must look at the exact mechanism of his paradox. McTaggart didn't just stop at identifying the infinite regress of the A-series. He ultimately concluded that time itself is an illusion, proposing a fundamental underlying reality he called the C-series. The C-series is a completely non-temporal ordering of reality, lacking even the directionality of the B-series. To McTaggart, the universe is a static, timeless hierarchy of entities, and our human perception merely misinterprets this C-series as a temporal A-series flow. Modern academic debate heavily scrutinizes this ontology. Defenders of the A-series, such as A.N. Prior, developed tense logic in the mid-20th century, attempting to formalize the language of passage mathematically without triggering McTaggart's regress. Prior argued that propositions change their truth value over time. For example, it is raining is true now, but false tomorrow, meaning reality is fundamentally tensed. Conversely, modern B-theorists, or four-dimensionalists like Theodore Sider and Quine, rely on first-order logic to argue that truth values are eternally fixed by their space-time coordinates. For the B-theorist, saying, "I am sitting," is incomplete. The true ontological statement is, "I am sitting at space-time coordinate x1, y1, z1," a fact that never changes. The ontological challenge facing the A-series is most acutely described by the truth-maker objection, a cornerstone of contemporary metaphysical debate regarding presentism. If only the present moment exists, one must account for what grounds the truth of past-tense propositions, such as dinosaurs walked the earth. In a robust ontological framework, truths require existing entities, truth-makers, to make them true. Presentists are often forced into highly complex, logical manoeuvres to solve this, such as positing primitive, ungrounded, tensed facts, or invoking abstract Lucretian properties that the present universe bears. For example, the universe currently possesses the property of having formerly contained dinosaurs. Critics argue this severely bloats the ontology of the present, rendering the B-theory far more parsimonious, as the block universe provides concrete, temporarily distant entities to ground past and future truth directly. Further diminishing the need for McTaggart's C-series, modern proponents of the B-theory, such as D.H. Meller, emphasize that the psychological sensation of passage can be fully accounted for without invoking a shifting metaphysical now. Meller's real-time framework relies on the concept of indexicality, comparing the temporal now to the spatial here. Just as the word here designates the spatial location of the speaker without implying a privileged center of the universe, now designates the temporal location of the utterance. Our cognitive architecture generates a continuous stream of indexical beliefs, tracking changes in the environment and updating our sensory inputs. The flow of time is therefore an artifact of how biological memory accumulates in a specific direction, completely removing the necessity for a dynamic A-series or a purely static, non-temporal C-series. This indexical approach aligns tightly with Julian Barbour's formulation of nows in theoretical physics. Barbour argues that the universe is a vast configuration space, a platonia of possible arrangements of matter, where time does not exist fundamentally. Each configuration is a complete, static snapshot, a now. The illusion of motion and causality arises because certain highly structured nows contain internal records, such as fossils or neurological memory patterns, which Balboa terms time capsules. The connections between these synaptic snapshots are mathematical rather than dynamic. Our conscious experience is simply the processing of these embedded records within a single, static configuration, making the sensation of a flowing A-series an emergent, localized phenomenon rather than a global structural reality. If you do want to defend the A-series, the idea of a moving now, you run headfirst into Minkowski spacetime. Erman Minkowski provided the geometric formulation for special relativity, fusing space and time into a single 4D manifold. The fatal blow to the A-series here isn't just conceptual, it's actually mathematical. To truly understand why the relativity of simultaneity destroys a universal now, we must look at the Rydtjik-Putnam argument, also known as the Andromeda paradox, proposed independently by C.W. Rydtjik and Hilary Putnam in the 1960s. Imagine two people, Alice and Bob, walking past each other on the street. Because they are moving at slightly different relative velocities, their planes of simultaneity, which are the mathematical slices of the present, intersect the Andromeda galaxy at vastly different points. For Alice, the space fleet launching from Andromeda is happening now. For Bob, the decision to launch the fleet hasn't even been made yet. Because both observers have equally valid frames of reference, the event in Andromeda must deterministically exist to satisfy Alice's now. This would logically force an eternalist block universe where the past, present, and future are all equally real. This is codified by the invariant spacetime interval, calculated as delta s squared equals negative c squared delta t squared plus delta x squared plus delta y squared plus delta z squared. While Alice and Bob disagree on the time elapsed, which is delta t, and the distance, delta x, delta y, delta z, between two events, they will always agree on delta s squared. Presentism demands that only the current slice exists, but Minkowski's causal structure requires the past light cone of an event to exist to explain why things happen. If reality is fragmented relative to the observer, known as fragmentalism, physics loses its objective predictive power. The 4D manifold preserves objectivity by abandoning the moving now entirely. While the Rydtjik-Putnam argument presents a formidable challenge to a universal now, it is not without rigorous philosophical pushback. The philosopher of physics Howard Stein famously critiqued the Andromeda paradox by demonstrating that it misapplies the concept of classical simultaneity to a relativistic framework. Stein argued that special relativity does not demand a rigid, eternalist block universe. Rather, it simply nullifies the concept of a global present. In his formulation, often referred to as point presentism or the past light cone ontology, an event is only ontologically determinate, or real, for an observer if it resides within that observer's past light cone. The distant deliberations of the Andromeda fleet lie entirely outside the causal structure of both Alice and Bob's immediate reality, meaning the concept of those events happening now is a mathematical abstraction devoid of physical consequence or ontological weight. Stein's critique reveals that the definition of becoming must be drastically localized to preserve any form of a dynamic universe. In this localized framework, the future is not a predetermined coordinate waiting to be encountered, but a domain of genuine causal openness that solidifies into reality only as events enter an observer's past light cone. This localized becoming strictly respects the invariant causal structure of spacetime, ensuring that no two observers will ever disagree on the chronological order of causally connected events. By rejecting the necessity of distant, global planes of simultaneity, one can maintain a rigorous, physical objectivity while still acknowledging a continuous, unfolding reality relative to specific inertial trajectories. Alternatively, some modern cosmologists look beyond the constraints of special relativity and point towards the cosmic microwave background, CMB, radiation, to establish a preferred cosmic reference frame. While Lorentz invariance strictly prohibits a privileged frame in empty space, the universe is not empty. It's filled with a uniform bath of residual radiation from the Big Bang. An observer moving relative to the CMB will detect a dipole anisotropy, a blue shift in the direction of motion and a red shift behind them. By calculating the frame in which the CMB is perfectly isotropic, one can theoretically establish a standard of cosmological time. While this does not violate the underlying mathematics of relativity, it provides a physical mechanism for reintroducing a universe-wide now, defined by the uniform cooling of the cosmos, offering a potential lifeline to presentist frameworks on a macro-cosmological scale. But if we don't provide a presentism these alternative justifications, and if the universe is just a static 4D block, well then let's answer the question, why does it feel like it has a direction? Well, most people describe the second law of thermodynamics as disorder always increases, but the real story is statistical, and it matters here. So we would distinguish between the macro state, the big picture like gas pressure, and the micro state, which is the exact momentum of every molecule. Boltzmann quantified this relationship with his famous entropy formula, S equals kb natural log ohm, where S is entropy, kb is the Boltzmann constant, and ohm is the number of microstates corresponding to a given macrostate. There are infinitesimally more microstates that look like a disordered gas than a neatly organized one. Therefore, a system naturally evolves toward high entropy purely by probability. The brutal problem of Le Schmidt's paradox arises because the fundamental laws of physics, Newtonian mechanics, Maxwell's equations, and the Schrödinger equation, are time reversal invariant. If you reverse the velocity of every particle, the math works perfectly backward. Furthermore, Boltzmann's theories faced attacks from Ernst Zermelo, who invoked the Poincaré recurrence theorem. Zermelo argued that, given infinite time, any closed system must eventually return to its initial low entropy state, meaning the arrow of time cannot be universally irreversible. Boltzmann's defense was that the timescale for a macroscopic recurrence, like a shattered glass spontaneously reassembling, is vastly longer than the current age of the universe, rendering the statistical arrow effectively absolute for our epoch. The traditional view of the second law of thermodynamics as a relentless slide towards disorder requires substantial nuance when applied to open, complex systems. The physicist Ilya Prigozhin expanded significantly upon Boltzmann's foundations by demonstrating that, far from thermodynamic equilibrium, the arrow of time acts as a constructive mechanism rather than purely a destructive one. Through the concept of dissipative structures, Prigozhin showed that systems continuously flooded with energy, such as the Earth receiving solar radiation, can undergo spontaneous self-organization. The entropy generated by this local increase in order is violently exported into the surrounding environment. Therefore, the arrow of time is directly responsible for the emergence of complex biological life and intricate chemical oscillations, framing irreversibility as the fundamental engine of creation in the macroscopic world. This macroscopic irreversibility is further clarified through the information-theoretic formulation of entropy, championed by Claude Shannon and integrated into statistical mechanics by Edwin James. In this framework, the macrostate is intimately bound to all epistemic limitations as observers. Entropy ceases to be solely a measure of physical chaos and instead represents the precise quantification of the missing information required to specify the exact microstate of a system. The statistical arrow of time emerges because physical systems naturally evolve into macrostates that correspond to a vastly larger number of potential microstates, thereby maximizing our ignorance. The sensation of time's passage is deeply entangled with the continuous loss of actionable information regarding the precise microscopic coordinates of the universe. The unbreakable link between thermodynamics and information is ultimately formalized by Landau's principle, which provides a physical bedrock for the cognitive experience of time. Rolf Landau demonstrated that the logical erasure of information inherently requires the dissipation of energy as heat, permanently raising the entropy of the environment. Because biological brains and artificial computers must continuously reset memory registers to process new sensory inputs and maintain cognitive continuity, the very act of thinking acts as an irreversible thermodynamic engine. The arrow of time we perceive is not merely a phenomenon that we passively observe, it's that generated by the metabolic cost of computing the external world, embedding the thermodynamic arrow into the very architecture of consciousness. Philosophers like Hugh Price and David Wallace point to boundary conditions rather than laws to solve this paradox. The increase of entropy toward the future is due to the universe beginning in an extraordinarily low entropy state, the past hypothesis. Think of Boltzmann's image of an entropy valley. The Big Bang is a deep valley of low entropy, and moving away in either direction on the x-axis means entropy increases. To understand this immense theoretical weight of the past hypothesis, we must consider the Boltzmann brain paradox. If the universe was infinite and in thermal equilibrium, low entropy states like our ordered galaxy would only occur via random, highly improbable statistical fluctuations. However, it is mathematically far more probable for a single, conscious brain complete with false memories of a universe to fluctuate into existence out of the chaos for a fraction of a second than it is for an entire ordered universe to form. If we do not accept the past hypothesis as a rigid cosmological starting point, statistical mechanics suggests that we are almost certainly just Boltzmann brains hallucinating reality. To avoid this, physicists like Roger Penrose proposed the whale curvature hypothesis, attempting to anchor the past hypothesis in the geometry of the early universe's gravity, stating that the universe began with zero gravitational entropy, a perfectly smooth distribution of matter, which allowed structure to form as it expanded. Because we are biological agents embedded in this specific thermodynamic gradient, our brains rely on record keeping, which requires entropy increase. Therefore, we can only see in the direction of the gradient. As Hugh Price argues via his Archimedean point, we project our psychological asymmetry onto the fabric of the universe. As we've discussed, the hour of time is thus not an intrinsic property of time itself. It's rather a statistical regularity inherited from our universe's unique initial conditions. David Albert formalized the immense implications of the past hypothesis by integrating it into a comprehensive theoretical framework he termed the Mentaculus, developed in collaboration with Barry Lower. The Mentaculus consists of exactly three ingredients: the fundamental dynamical laws of physics, the exceptionally low entropy boundary condition of the early universe, and a statistical probability postulate establishing a uniform distribution over the microstates compatible with that initial condition. Albert and Lower argue that this remarkably austere mathematical triad is sufficient to derive the entirety of macroscopic irreversibility, successfully underwriting all of the thermodynamics asymmetries without requiring any new fundamental physics. The Mentaculus framework demonstrates that the hour of time is an entirely emergent feature, a vast statistical gradient resulting from the universe rolling down from a highly specific, low probability origin. Within this framework, Albert addresses the epistemic hour of time, providing a rigorous explanation for why we possess detailed records of the past, but none of the future. The past hypothesis functions as the ultimate ready state for the entire cosmos. A record, whether a fossil, a photograph, or a neurological memory, is created when a local subsystem branches off from the global thermodynamic gradient, imprinting a localized physical trace. Because the universe originated in a state of minimal entropy, statistical mechanics dictates that the macroscopic correlations between current records and past events are overwhelmingly probable, whereas macroscopic correlations with future events are statistically negligible. We remember the past precisely because the low entropy boundary condition forces the universe to leave physical footprints exclusively in one temporal direction. However, treating the past hypothesis as an unexplained brute fact boundary condition remains philosophically unsatisfying to many cosmologists, prompting models that attempt to generate this low entropy state dynamically. Theoretical physicist Sean Carroll proposes a model of spontaneous inflation operating within an eternal, high entropy background universe. In a completely empty thermal equilibrium state, de Sitter space, tiny quantum fluctuations can occasionally spark the explosive expansion of new, localized spacetime regions. These baby universes effectively pinch off from the parent universe, starting with remarkably low entropy and expanding to create their own thermodynamic hours of time. This model suggests that our localized past hypothesis is a natural consequence of quantum mechanics operating over infinite timescales, generating endless pockets of structure out of the eternal chaos, rather than a unique cosmological miracle. Now, quantum mechanics adds another layer of complexity to the architecture of time. If classical relativity dismantled the global now, quantum theory forces us to examine how irreversibility sneaks back into a microscopic world that fundamentally should not have an hour. To understand this, we must first look at the idealized mathematical realm of a closed quantum system. In a perfectly isolated system, the evolution of a quantum state is governed by the Schrödinger equation. I h bar times the partial of psi with respect to t equals h hat psi, which describes this evolution as strictly unitary. Unitary evolution is mathematically reversible. If you possess the complete state of a closed information at any time t, you can evolve it backward to t equals zero without any loss of information. In this pristine mathematical space, there is no inherent arrow pointing towards the future. However, the physicists Naomichi Hatano and Gonzalo Adornes correctly point out a physical reality, We do not live in closed systems. We live in open systems that are in constant, unavoidable interaction with an external environment. This environmental interaction is the exact locus where the arrow of time begins to emerge through a process known as decoherence. To deepen this, we can look to the foundational work of physicist Wojciech H. Zurek at Los Alamos National Laboratory, who pioneered decoherence theory. When a quantum system, such as a particle in a delicate state of superposition, bumps into a stray photon or an air molecule, its phase relations leak out and become entangled with the surrounding environment. While the universal wave function, the system plus the entire universe, might still technically be evolving unitarily and reversibly, the local information has effectively vanished from our perspective. To reverse this process, to unleak the superposition, would require gathering every scattered photon and air molecule with infinite precision, which is a thermodynamic impossibility. Quantum irreversibility is not a new kind of temporal flare. It's the same old story of coarse-grained information loss and entropy. This explains why we see particles decay, but never spontaneously undecay. Not because the fundamental laws forbid time reversal, but because the background environment is already relentlessly aligned with the thermodynamic arrow. This naturally leads us to the most famous arrow in quantum theory, the collapse of the wave function upon measurement. Whether you subscribe to the Copenhagen interpretation, championed by Niels Bohr and Werner Heisenberg, where the collapse is a real, abrupt physical change, or the many worlds interpretation, proposed by Hugh Everett, where the universe deterministically branches, the outcome for the local observer is identical, an asymmetric experience of time. We record the result of an experiment, and that record becomes a stable trace in our past. We never witness a macroscopic record spontaneously dissolve back into a quantum haze. As the philosopher Hugh Price suggests, this asymmetry in our records and memories isn't a fundamental law of quantum mechanics, but a reflection of our standpoint as physical agents embedded in a thermodynamic gradient. Quantum mechanics does not replace the thermodynamic arrow. It inherits it directly from the low entropy boundary condition of our universe. Wojciech H. Zurek substantially expanded the foundational concept of decoherence by formulating the theory of quantum Darwinism, which explains not only how our quantum coherence vanishes, but how an objective classical reality actively emerges from the quantum substrate. Zurek proposes that the environment does not merely act as a passive sink that destroys delicate superpositions, rather it functions as a vast communication channel. As a quantum system interacts with its surroundings, the environment selectively amplifies and broadcasts specific, stable properties of the system while rapidly suppressing incompatible ones. This theoretical framework provides a mathematically rigorous mechanism showing exactly how classical objectivity is born from the chaotic, probabilistic haze of quantum mechanics. At the core of quantum Darwinism is the concept of the predictability sieve, which dictates the criteria for survival in the quantum realm. Only states that are robust against continuous environmental perturbation, specifically states with well-defined spatial locations or momenta, survive the decoherence process. These surviving states are known as pointer states. Through relentless interaction with the photon bath of the universe, the information about these pointer states is replicated into highly redundant copies scattered throughout the environment. It is this massive redundancy that allows multiple, independent observers to intercept a fraction of the environmental radiation and agree on the classical state of the object, forging an objective, shared reality from subjective quantum interactions. This Darwinian process provides a compelling resolution to the measurement problem by explaining the appearance of wave function collapse without requiring a discontinuous, irreversible break in the Schrödinger equation. The irreversibility of a quantum measurement is entirely an artifact of information dynamics. Once the environment has thoroughly interrogated a quantum system and proliferated the information regarding its pointer state, reversing the process would require an observer to systematically recapture and unentangle every stray photon and particle that has interacted with the system. The hour of time observed in microscopic physics is therefore rooted entirely in the continuous, uncontrollable leakage of quantum information, aligning the microscopic world seamlessly with the macroscopic thermodynamic gradient. We have now travelled from McTaggart's logical paradoxes to Einstein's curved manifolds, through Boltzmann's statistical entropy valleys, and finally into the microscopic leakage of quantum decoherence. When we synthesise these highly disparate fields of physics and philosophy, they converge on a single, undeniable pressure point: the intuitive idea that time passes as an independent dynamic substance is becoming scientifically impossible to sustain. McTaggart suggested becoming lacked an ontological grounding, and Minkowski's geometric formulation of space-time completely dissolved the objective global now. If Einstein and Minkowski are correct, and empirical evidence dating back to the 1887 Michelson-Morley experiment overwhelmingly suggests they are, then the explanatory heavy lifting of the universe is performed by tenseless relations in a static 4D manifold, not by a shifting present. The remaining directionality we experience is almost certainly perspectival. Thermodynamics reflects the universe's initial low entropy condition, the past hypothesis, rather than a primitive feature of time itself. We mistake the gradient of entropy for a flow of time simply because we are biological machines that require that exact gradient to process energy and form memories. This realization represents a massive anti-anthropocentric turn. It suggests that our deepest, most intimately felt intuition that now is special and time moves is merely a localized feature of our biology, not a grand law of the cosmos. For many, this realization can feel deeply nihilistic. If the future already exists at a distant coordinate in the 4D block, does anything we do actually matter? Do we have freedom? Does a tenseless universe obliterate any human agency? Philosophers of the block universe, such as Karl Hofer, argue for a rigorous compatibilism, suggesting that the structure of the universe actually bolsters the weight of our actions. As I would like to argue, in an eternalist block universe, your actions are not ephemeral. They do not happen and then vanish forever into the non-existence of the past. Instead, they're permanent, fixed features of the 4D space-time structure. As the philosopher Joe Schmidt articulates regarding agency, stating that the future is already there does not mean it is settled regardless of what you do. Rather, the future part of the block contains the specific results of your current choices. The direction of explanation remains firmly intact. The future is the way it is because of your agency. Urgency and deliberation are highly real experiences for agents like us, even if they aren't explicitly written into the underlying metric tensor of the cosmos. We are not passive leaves being swept away by an invisible temporal current. We are the active architects of a four-dimensional monument. If time does not flow, then nothing is ever truly lost to the past. It is merely located at a different coordinate. Science tells us now is a coordinate. Philosophy tells us it's a perspective. But for us, now remains the absolute location of our responsibility. The block universe framework often triggers a profound existential anxiety regarding the futility of human agency, a concern effectively dismantled by philosopher Janine Ismail. In her work, How Physics Makes Us Free, Ismail conceptualizes the human self not as a passive observer trapped within a static manifold, but as a highly sophisticated causal hub. Biological evolution has produced macroscopic systems capable of intense internal deliberation, processing vast amounts of environmental data and historical memories to formulate complex decisions. Within a deterministic 4D block, these internal computations are not bypassed or rendered irrelevant by the laws of physics. They are the exact indispensable mechanisms through which the universe operates locally. The future is structurally dependent on the precise outcomes of our cognitive processing, firmly embedding our agency into the geometric fabric of space-time. This compatibilist defense is significantly strengthened by examining the epistemology of the embedded observer. Because we are physical subsystems strictly contained within the universe, any attempt to perfectly predict our own future actions requires self-reference, which generates severe computational instabilities. A predictive engine cannot perfectly simulate its own state and the environment simultaneously without entering an infinite regress. Therefore, regardless of whether the universe is globally deterministic or statically fixed in four dimensions, the future must remain epistemically open and uncomputable from the perspective of the localized agent. This intrinsic epistemic asymmetry guarantees that the subjective experience of deliberation and the sensation of an unfolding, branching universe are inescapable, structural features of the conscious reality rather than mere psychological illusions. Ultimately, synthesizing these physical constraints reveals that the localized phenomenological flow of time is an authentic evolutionary triumph. The absence of an objective, sweeping, and universal now does not render our temporal experience false. It reveals it to be a specialized biological interface. We require the thermodynamic gradient to fuel our metabolism and process information, and we rely on quantum decoherence to stabilize our macroscopic environment. The feeling of time passing is the highly accurate internal translation of these physical gradients, allowing us to navigate a complex causal structure. Our experience of time is the precise mechanism by which a static, four-dimensional cosmos generates localized packets of meaning, memory, and responsibility. If there's a common thread through all of this, it is pressure. Pressure on the moving present. Pressure on the idea of a global now. Pressure on the thought that time itself carries a built-in direction. Relativity dissolves simultaneity. Thermodynamics relocates the arrow to boundary conditions. Quantum mechanics inherits that asymmetry rather than creating it. What remains is not a cosmic river sweeping us forward, but a perspective embedded in a very particular thermodynamic gradient. The universe may not privilege this moment, yet for us, it is still the coordinate of choice, memory, and responsibility. In a block universe, nothing is erased, nothing slips into non-existence. The question is no longer whether time flows. It is what kind of beings we must be to experience a static cosmos as something that feels alive.